Hey guys, welcome to the Energy Council's Investor Series podcast. I'm your host, Ben West, and today I'm joined by Randy Newcomer, Founder and Chief Executive Officer, and Scott Rice, Managing Partner and Chief Operating Officer at Riverbend Energy Group. During today's episode, Randy and Scott talk about the challenging energy fundraising environment, and they discuss current LP goals and share what they believe are the best energy investment strategies to achieve those goals. They also talk us through their non-op and energy transition vehicles, explaining the benefits of pursuing a non-op strategy and why this might be attractive to LPs, as well as the investment opportunities across the energy transition value chain that can meet their return expectations. Hope you guys enjoy. Hi, Randy. Hi, Scott. Thanks very much for doing this today. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Ben, this is exciting.
Brilliant. Well, if you've listened before, you'll know that I like to start things off on a personal note just to set the scene. We're all human at the end of the day, so maybe you can both explain or give a bit of context as to where you grew up, what you studied, where you studied, how did you get into the energy business, and Randy, maybe how did your journey lead to you founding Riverbend Energy Group, and Scott, sort of how did your journey lead to you joining the firm back in 2008, I think it was.
Yeah, no, Ben, it's awesome. First off, it's great to host you in Houston today at our offices. Thanks for your leadership and support of the energy market and supplying this connectivity, the connectivity between, you know, investors that are interested in energy and related sectors and managers like Riverbend. So, you know, as the energy market has changed over the last decade, we think, you know, Ben, folks like you and your team at the Energy Council are very important and the industry very much appreciates your efforts. As far as my background, I was born in South Louisiana, in Houma, Louisiana. My father was a drilling engineer at the time for Union Oil of California. His father, he grew up in the industry. His father was an accountant who graduated Rice University, and he worked in the industry his entire career in Lafayette, Louisiana. My father was transferred in his career in 1975 to Houston. I was 8 years old, and my two sisters were in high school. So I grew up and graduated high school in Houston. I then went off to Texas A&M to study petroleum engineering and started my career at Amoco back in Houston in 1989 and worked on a variety of challenging engineering and business development assignments in the Permian Basin, but based out of Houston. It was a great 8 years at Amoco. I was fortunate enough to then move over to NCAP Investments in 1997. And in my 6 years at NCAP, I was fortunate enough to be involved in looking into many different business plans in the energy sector and also be involved in many portfolio investments with the four original NCAP partners. And through that set of experiences and a yearning to get back to the asset side of the industry, Riverbend was formed in 2003. And it was invented and began by focusing on the non-operated and mineral asset classes of traditional energy. And we eventually added an operations portfolio in 2014. Scott and I are very lucky to work together at a firm built around people with character, grit, with a focus on teamwork, and always seeking as a team to give effort on prudent processes to deliver successful outcomes. And so it's great to share our story, Ben, and it's great to be with you today.
Yeah, no, Ben, great to be with you. And this is my first podcast, so very excited about that. Put that on my kind of check the box thing.
Yeah.
And have enjoyed your podcast over the last couple of months. Been listening and catching up. My background, similar to Randy's, really grew up in Galveston, Texas. I'm a proud Galvestonian. Then went off to Texas A&M Petroleum Engineering, interned for a bunch of different outfits, and then ended up joining Pioneer Natural Resources in Dallas. There, starting the reservoir group for a couple of years, and then really not sure how I landed the gig, but ended up doing investor relations for the last 3 years and working with Scott Sheffield and Tim Dove, and really tell people that was my MBA on the fly, is working with the investment community while, you know, in the public space, really got a sense for what investors wanted in a public company. And then, you know, that'll translate as I talk about Riverbend, kind of a different investor group. But that was my first experience away from just reserves and production. But you know, what does that mean to the bottom line? Ultimately, I worked there for 6 years and met my wife in Fort Worth. She was finishing medical school, thinking about residency, and one of her residency opportunities was Galveston at UTMB. And I wanted to get back to the Gulf Coast. And then a gentleman I worked with there at Pioneer also started with Randy at Amoco. And, you know, Randy and I had a couple of meetings, and that was 16 years, you know, we're 16 years later on that. So it's been a great ride. And as Randy said, we work with a lot of, you know, really makes Riverbend special is the people that we have here. And we look forward to kind of, you know, exposing you a little bit more of that today.
Fantastic. Are you able just to give us a quick overview of Riverbend's current exposure? So assets under management, a breakdown of asset classes, so upstream versus non-op versus transition type opportunities, and geographically, what's the focus? Is it solely domestic across the US? Are you interested in international at all? Just good to paint the picture there.
No, Ben, thanks for the question. Riverbend's an internally owned private energy investment manager. We're a registered investment advisor with the SEC. And we possess a consistent and attractive track record over our 21-year history since 2003. As I previously stated, we founded the firm to directly own and manage upstream assets in a single promote structure with business plans that we create here at Riverbend with three asset classes in mind that we think are set apart and unique in their risks and investment structure. Operated assets, where we control whose rig we use and what trucks we drive, non-operated assets, which participate with great operators, and mineral and royalty assets. To date, we've raised equity and debt capital for these three asset classes on a bespoke basis. And we do think each have distinct qualities. Technically, commercially, they all have different risks. They have different buyers. They have different sellers. And different business partners are attracted to the three different asset classes. So as we're on Riverbend 11 at this point in our history, we have managed six non-operated portfolios, two operated portfolios, and two mineral and royalty portfolios. And we're focused on the direct acquisition and management of these top-tier core assets in those three asset classes onshore U.S. So not international, Ben, not Gulf of Mexico, and we haven't explored out to California either. In traditional energy, we have managed over $5 billion in real assets over our 10 directly managed portfolios, and we have successfully fully monetized seven of those 10, which makes us very unique. We have generated all-time net returns for our investors of 35% rate of return and 2.5 MOIC, which is very exciting for us. Our most recent exit was in 2022 of our non-operated portfolio that was in the core of the Williston, the Utica, the Fayetteville, and the Haynesville for $1.8 billion in cash. And in 2022, we launched our first strategy focused on the energy transition you are mentioning, Ben. And that team is highly experienced and dedicated. It is a team led by Eric Danziger. Our strategy in Riverbend 10 is to provide growth equity, buying through a fund structure into going concern businesses that provide services and technologies enabling the transition. So think picks and shovels and oil field services for the energy transition space. And that's where we play. So today we have four active businesses under management and in the portfolio that we are deploying and allocating capital to and managing those portfolios. Riverbend 7 is our operated business in the Midland Basin in Reagan and Upton counties that is consistently expanding and actively developing and delivering growth through horizontal drilling of the massive Wolfcamp complex. Riverbend 9 is a mineral and royalty business with a portfolio of assets in the core of the Delaware and Midland Basins. That's 85% of our portfolio at this point in time, as well as the Williston, which we really like, and the Karnes Trough part of the upper part of the Eagleford in Karnes, DeWitt, and Gonzales counties. Riverbend 10, as I previously stated, is our energy transition services platform, and we have three active investments there. We have a backup power solution delivered by a hydrogen company called Harness that is very active in the backup power solution business. Solar backsheet manufacturing business called Endurance, which is manufacturing backsheets in the U.S. And a continuous emissions monitoring company, Cube, that is an oil field related entity doing great work in emissions monitoring all over the U.S. So we're always seeking and researching portfolio ideas in these three asset classes and planning business formation activities around that. And as our portfolios go through monetization, we develop a replacement capital raise to propel a new business plan in that real asset space. So that was a little bit of a run through of our current activities, Ben, and we're hopeful that that's clear on our undertakings today.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, that definitely gives us a good overview and I think a platform to launch the conversation. So maybe just to start off, obviously we're looking ahead to our New York Energy Capital Assembly at the NASDAQ in June, which obviously you and the team will be joining. A lot of the conversations that came out of some of the advisory boards that we were running in preparation for that assembly sort of revolved around views on commodity prices over the next couple of years, the role of oil versus gas and LNG sort of scenarios. What are your views on commodity prices over the next couple of years? And do you think oil has more short-term momentum? Is natural gas really just a long-term play on LNG export and sort of gas as a transition fuel? How's this going to affect investor confidence and the ability of the industry to be able to access long-term stable capital?
Yeah, I'll jump in there and take that first. You know, as it relates to crude, you know, we are optimistic as we move forward. We do like buying on the strip today where it's declining down to $65. And we have to remind our investors, you know, anytime oil spikes and we're, you know, buying at something that's got a front month of 83, we have to remind them that, you know, in this backwardation of the curve, we're really looking at a $65 to $70 exit scenario. And we think the demand there is going to support that and maybe be even, you know, something above. So we tend to like the strip. We tend to are very optimistic about the crude, you know, dynamics and supply demand. And so that's our march as we move forward. But we're also, you know, very focused on, as we acquire these producing assets, we're very aggressive in our hedging strategy. We think about hedging and debt very kind of one-to-one. And so as we protect the balance sheet, as we acquire over many, many acquisitions, we're not going to do one big acquisition. We layer on hedges very aggressively because we take plenty of commodity exposure at the exit. And so that's something we feel very fundamental to Riverbend. And it's something that we will continue to do. We want to make sure our investors understand how we think about hedging and leverage. You know, natural gas is exciting for us. We do want to participate and get into natural gas. We do think, though, natural gas needs to be supported by either combined cycle gas, combined cycle electric generation, or some LNG. We think that's kind of a long-term play for gas. As we think about unique thesis, those are the kind of threads that we're pulling on. Is how to own gas associated with those downstream users. But ultimately, gas is going to be the transition fuel. You know, we're very lucky here to have the kind of gas supplies we have. We would hope that more people would realize that and really transition to that. So we're bullish on crude and we're optimistic on gas and how to play it. We don't think gas is going to rip anytime soon with the amount of supply that can come on. We think it's going to be range bound. So those are, you know, I did make a joke and I was going to say, you know, oil is going to be $82.43 in 2027 and gas is going to be, you know, $3.45, but we have no clue. Mm-hmm. But we try to really manage our risk through hedging and we are buying today on kind of an optimistic view of the strip.
Brilliant. No, that's really helpful. And I mean, I think I'll come back to a few of those points shortly, but to touch on something that's been a really key theme that's dominated a lot of the conversations we've been having with investor groups that we've engaged with over the past couple of years is just to come on to the topic of the current fundraising environment and the environment over the past couple of years for traditional energy investors. I think it continues to be a challenging environment. We did see an uptick in traditional energy funds that launched and came to market in 2023 versus 2022. I mean, if you have listened to the podcast, you'll know that we had Eric Bells on a couple of weeks ago. He was saying that in 2014-15, we saw about $55 billion worth of private traditional funds launch and come to market. And then when we ran an advisory board in New York, January 2023, there was sort of the feedback from that meeting was you saw $2 or $3 billion worth of funds launch and come to market. So it's record lows for the space. There has been an uptick, but it's still a tough environment. So from your perspective and the conversations that you've been having, what are the current goals for LPs and what are the best investment strategies to achieve those goals and get them back on board?
Yeah, Ben, it's a fascinating question and a fascinating time, challenging time, energizing time to be part of the infrastructure on energy. You know, over the past, I think Eric nailed it on your previous podcast, but yeah, over the last 6+ years, through the ESG movement, the price war, COVID, a lot of uncertainty, there has been definitely an energy fundraising downturn, especially in traditional energy. However, you know, we would tell you over the last 12 to 24 months, there's also been a rush about every energy manager on the street in private land is hit the institutional market with a fundraise. And so we've been in that market as well. And we've seen an overall smaller pool of institutional investors with many endowments and pension plans turning away from traditional energy opportunities, mainly through the regulatory and social revert vis-a-vis ESG. But many family offices have turned to the space, and that has been a very positive factor. And, you know, along these lines, just relative to what are investors looking for, what are the trends, a few trends in the market. You know, we have to remember that 82% of worldwide energy is fossil fuels today. 82%. It's a big number. So fossil fuels are very important to the 8 billion people on planet Earth. And 18% non-carbon is very significant as well. And we're participating there and rooting that on. Secondly, the oil and liquids market is the world's largest commodity market, $2.2 trillion. Iron ore is next in line at $300 billion. So the oil market is massive, and the liquids market drives mobility, construction, and food to propel these 8 billion lives on the planet, a majority of which are in impoverished and or developing countries, and all have aspirations for better living conditions. And so a very important commodity around the world. That crude oil inventory levels are low at the moment over the last 5 years. But yes, there is 5 million barrels of oil a day excess capacity, quote unquote, in the market, albeit in a very short list of holders in a volatile area of the world. But we're seeing continuous demand surges with jet fuel and other transportation fuels soon to zoom past pre-COVID levels. And the overall market on demand on liquids is surging, and many people projecting that our current oil market of 102 barrels of oil a day, million barrels of oil a day today, will be in 2 to 4 years, 107 million barrel oil a day market. So, you know, who's delivering that liquids into the market? Brazil's doing good. Guyana, Argentina, Mexico, Canada's doing well. But that leaves the U.S., which is a leader around the world, and Riverbend participates directly in that space and directly in the core liquids-rich basins that our investment is targeting. And our investors today are identifying energy as a very high need to invest, and that is critical. So we think that's a fantastic trend. And as a result, traditional energy investors who aren't tied down by ESG are becoming far more open to the profile of what Riverbend represents: a direct real asset manager, a single promote system, a well-defined business plan, a long and extended cycle-tested track record. As Scott said, a clear hedging program with conservative debt, with a team that owns the firm and shares equity incentive deep into the organization. And so we believe Riverbend has a differentiated performance over 21 years and 7 full monetization. And that has resonated well in the investment community, but it remains, as Eric said on your podcast, a very different market today than 5, 10, 15 years ago. But we have a 2-decade view from here, and we will continue to promote solutions in the energy industry that will attract investment.
Fantastic. No, Randy, that's brilliant. And I think one sort of strategy that I want to delve into in a little bit more detail, where I know you've had a lot of success, and it's something that seems to have gained a lot of traction over the past 12 to 24 months, is around non-op. I mean, how is Riverbend's non-op strategy differentiated? You've obviously had a lot of success there. Are you able to talk more about that and the benefits of pursuing a non-op strategy and why that might be attractive to LPs?
No, we love talking about that. And I always joke that, you know, that we were non-op before non-op was cool. And it's definitely headed that way. But first, I think it's important to back up a little bit and talk about just our approach in general. You know, we really have three things that make unique Riverbend unique. We focus on a basin model where we act like we own every single acre in the basins that we play. And what that means is we have a dedicated team that's not distracted by acquisitions, by ongoing drilling. What this team is focused on is modeling every single unit, acre, currently producing well, undeveloped well, future wells, by bench, different strategies on capital, you know, commercial assumptions. And that's what this team focuses on. It's a team of about five folks that we're actually growing. If you ask me, I'm one of the fastest growing teams at Riverbend. So we tell investors, we can tell you what we think every operator is going to do, what their performance is, how that compares. So that makes us very knowledgeable in these basins that we play. Then we put a process on top of that. We have built over the last 7+ years a proprietary process that we call R-Force, where it sits on top of this basinal model and it manages our day-to-day activity from deal flow, from activity, how we put bids out, how those different strategies come in and go out of Riverbend. So we have our basins model with a process, and then we have our unique people that are process oriented that sit on top of that. So ultimately, our fundamentals for Riverbend are those three elements. Now, as it relates to non-op, we utilize that to make us very efficient. We're going to deploy a ground game where we're calling individual owners for our non-op and our minerals. We're going to have a bank of brokers that know Riverbend that we've been dealing business with for the last 20 years that send us opportunity. And then we're going to chase these big basinal packages. So we like the non-op space today because the places that we're playing, the Bakken and the Permian, have delineated and de-risked from a spacing, benches, operator efficiencies. And we're able to go in into these basins where it would be very, very difficult to operate a position and grow a sizable footprint and deploy, you know, $500 to $1 billion of capital and participate in what we think on a risk adjusted return. These wells have a very tight bandwidth on their EURs, their economics, and that's what's attractive to our LP base. Is we tell them, look, you like what Pioneer's doing, you like what Pioneer just bought, I mean, what Exxon just bought Pioneer, we can put you in those same wells behind Exxon. We can put you right behind Diamondback from a non-operated standpoint. And we're also doing that in minerals as well. So that's our approach. We also like, and we think what makes us unique, and I'll probably talk about it more, is that we're happy to buy white space. We see a lot of our non-operated competitors buying near-term activity. So they can see the permits, they can see the DUCs, they can see where the rigs are drilling. That's fine. But what we like to do is go buy the white space that has no activity because our basin models tell us when we think each operator will be hitting that acreage. We're not going to get it perfect, but we think on average over the next 3 to 4 years, that acreage that we're targeting will be hit. And we have the model and the confidence in our buildup and our NAV stack to buy that white space acreage that we think will get developed. So that's a little bit about what makes Riverbend unique, why we like the non-op and the mineral space from a minority position, and how we go about doing it. And we just think today, from a risk-adjusted approach, these basins where 75% of the activity, 75% of the production is today, this is how we're going to build our portfolio there.
Fantastic. No, I think sort of the risk-adjusted approach there at the end sort of really hits the nail on the head and definitely is... It's sort of core to how a lot of these LPs are approaching some of those considerations or opportunities. But let's again jump forward. I've mentioned before that you're going to be joining us at NASDAQ in June for the New York Energy Capital Assembly. And Randy, you're currently down to sit on a panel. Where is the real energy investment opportunity for the next few years, both on the public and the private side? So let's get ahead of the game. I'll put the question straight to you now and see if we can get an insight ahead of June. Where is the real energy investment opportunity for the next few years on the private side? Where do you see the best opportunity to achieve attractive risk-adjusted returns?
Well, Ben, we've got to get people in their seats, and so we can't give it all. We've got 2 or 3 months to go, But no, we very much appreciate the opportunity to come in June. And as you can tell from Scott and I's passion, you know, we believe in the upstream space, and the best private investment opportunities will come through, you know, managers like Riverbend that are highly experienced and have deep teams. We've demonstrated success through multiple cycles. And we've realized big proceeds to our investors on a fully realized basis. So we think, you know, managers like Riverbend offering single promote investment structures, direct access to our team, will be able to generate incrementally better returns in an increasingly difficult market. And so we think those attributes of a team are critical going forward. And as far as, you know, upstream asset classes go, as we've talked about operated asset class minerals and non-operated asset class, you know, I think as our industry consolidation continues on the operated side, it's becoming harder and harder, and Scott touched on this a little bit, to acquire high quality operated assets. In more particular commentary, high quality operated assets that remain valuable if we go through a down cycle like COVID, the price war, et cetera, which we have seen happen. This can lead operators to move outside their core areas, seek opportunity in play extensions or secondary basins. Secondary basins meaning higher finding costs and less liquidity in the exit market. So we are having great success at Riverbend with our operated business, Riverbend 7, which is focused on Midland Basin. And it would be hard to build that business from scratch today. It'd be very difficult. So in today's market, a sizable operated transaction in the core area of the U.S. liquids-rich basin can be very expensive and even gas-weighted, and are usually transacted at one point in time. And so that adds significant risk. So that's the points we would highlight in and around the operated asset class. In minerals, as Scott talked about, I mean, we have a very active and broad portfolio, and I touched on it in Riverbend 9, very competitive in the actively drilled basins to acquire mineral assets. We're having great success. We're acquiring in the Permian, the Williston, the Karnes Trough, and the Eagle Ford. And this asset class in the minerals space will continue to be attractive for a variety of investors, given its non-cost-bearing nature. We build our portfolio, as Scott touched on, with a strong technical subsurface bent that's very unique and set apart in the private market. And we love showing not only our operating partners, but investors, you know, what the tools are that we have that we've been investing in for over a decade here at Riverbend to make the general partner as strong as she can be. So with all those internal processes, engineering, mapping, and geologic models that we have, along with our underwriting expertise, we think minerals is a great place to play with a very sophisticated institutional team. And as far as non-op, you know, Scott went through it. We believe very much in that business model. This is our sixth portfolio build. That asset class offers investors the ability to access the highest quality assets behind the highest quality operators in the most active basins at all different transaction sizes, small to big, $100,000 to $150 million, $250 million. And you can build a portfolio over time, 2 to 3 years, through changes in the technical and commercial conditions of the industry. So we here at Riverbend provide our investors access to the best neighborhoods of subsurface rock that we have our basin models behind, and we're partnered with great operating entities. And this gives Riverbend a great competitive advantage in the non-operating working interest space. So we love talking about the three asset classes, and we're excited about all three. And depending on the cycle, and depending on the time of the market, they all have their spots.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's a nice segue, and you've probably already touched on some of the points that I'm wanting to ask you about here, but it's a nice segue into the next two questions, which I might almost merge together, which is around, I think you've alluded to the challenge in identifying and getting into high quality operated assets. And it's definitely, we've seen a preference as sort of capital discipline has come to the fore for investors to pursue, say, PDP assets versus new development opportunities. So I guess the question I would put to you is, where are the best opportunities for private investors to access quality development activity with upside potential that maybe we haven't seen such an appetite for in recent years? What is the appetite there today? And then leading on to that, I mean, what basins matter outside of the Permian? I think a lot of the rhetoric has been around tier one rock being drilled up. Now is tier two becoming the new tier one? How does that affect margins? So on and so forth. So as companies run out of high quality inventory in the Permian, where do they go next?
I mean, I think as where's the best opportunity for investors to find high quality assets, I would say at Riverbend in our strategy. And, you know, in all seriousness, because our model does put allow us to acquire and put investors behind, you know, where again, 75% of the activity, 75% of the undeveloped in the Delaware, the Midland, and the Bakken. Through our basin model, we see the Permian, the Delaware, and the Midland basins about 9 more years of development left. That's utilizing current rig count, current frac crews, and kind of that core level locations. It will expand as they, you know, move out from core to tier one, tier two. So we see 9-year runway for us to, and that's what gets us excited about our non-operated strategy. We think we can put a position into that undeveloped acre and see those realized well on well returns. That's what gets us excited. Now, the Bakken gets a little bit less press, but we like it. And we think the Bakken actually has 18 years of development. Its rig count is much lower off of its peak. Its frac crews are much lower. But where we're targeting, you know, there's a lot of units in the Bakken that have been fully developed. Where Riverbend is targeting is those units that have a lot of meat on the bone. And so that's where we're positioning our investors. And so that case, those are the three basins that we're focused on. We do watch and observe what's going on in the expansion of the Permian. It's not an area that we're playing because we see $150 billion of non-operated opportunity in what we're trying to deploy. While the operators will continue to move out, and Rainey will jump in here on other basins, our focus over the next 4 to 8 years is going to be deploying in the core rock because of our strategy.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Ben, it's, I think we've all seen it, you know, Exxon Pioneer, Chevron Hess, Diamondback Endeavor, Permian Resources, Earthstone, Core Enerplus. So that's very heavy Midland Delaware Basin activity, where the best rock in the country exists, and then Chord Enerplus is in the Williston. So really from an M&A standpoint, what we've seen over the past 9 months has really just backstopped what Scott just talked about relative to where the best subsurface resource is in the lower 48. And that also backstops Riverbend's strategy, our investment thesis that we carry to the investment table to seek partners who want to come along with us. And so the activity in the M&A market just highlights the interest and the liquidity in these core basins. And those are the core basins we focus on. It also highlights these companies focused on securing quality inventory, because inventory is becoming more and more critical to this prospective 107 million barrels oil a day market that we might see in the next 2, 3, 4 years. So, yes, we think there is a runway of, as Scott talked about, you know, 8 to 20 years in some of these basins as they expand horizontally and vertically. But we also think that focus on inventory is becoming more and more important. And with continued operational efficiency improvements, you know, we think these activities will expand into tier one, tier two. And we think, you know, as that emerges, other non-Permian basins will become more interesting. But we have to remember that accessing quality oilfield service providers will also be a factor as some of those basins expand, because there's not always good oilfield services, takeaway capacity, et cetera, in new frontiers. But ultimately, as inventory depletes, with the backdrop that we talked about of an outlook for demand growth, we expect commodity prices, you know, in a backwardated nature today, down to 64, 65, 66. We're very happy to invest because we think that backdrop in the medium to long term will very much improve. And so, so this will open up, you know, other development as the industry gets more and more efficient. But we're focused on our core liquids rich basins at this point in time. But we'll begin to look at natural gas weighted basins as we see the opportunity. And we're continually seeking new opportunities for investors and bringing those ideas to the market. And so it'll be a very interesting next 5 to 10 years, and we're lucky to be a part of it.
Fantastic. Randy, you alluded obviously to the wave of consolidation that we've been seeing recently, and obviously the focus on securing high quality inventory and sort of how high up on the priority list that is for a number of these companies. I think what's interesting for me is, as you see an Exxon acquire a Pioneer and that position they're building in that basin, is what are the opportunities for smaller players off the back of these upstream M&A mega boom sort of this wave that we're seeing? I think the feedback that we've received is there's still capital for the $500 million type check sizes and above. You're still seeing the big players you'd expect to see putting money to work there. But where there's a real lack of capital is maybe for some of those smaller players in the sub $250 million, but particularly the sub $100 million deal space. I mean, what are the opportunities? Who do you anticipate seeing coming to the fore and plugging this gap? And does this almost open the door to a new wave of PE activity?
No, I totally agree. You know, the life cycle of the well is very obvious, and it's happening here in front of our eyes with the these mega, you know, acquisitions. And so we will see some opportunities, and I'm very excited for the smaller PE backed company. But the question is, who will support that? You know, the banking sector is really tough right now. Private equity are looking for smaller amount of group of teams in their inventory. So it will evolve, and I'm excited to see that. And I think, you know, today we're not focused on that. We're going to continue to focus on the core positions, but we're interested to see what will come out of these companies and who will acquire them. And I think it'll be a whole new waves of teams. I hope it'll bring a lot of young guys into the industry, and quite exciting over the next 10 plus years on what will come out of these acquisitions. For us, it's probably going to be stuff that we're not focused on early on. But as we evolve into Riverbend, we're always thinking about different ideas to bring forth to our investors. And I would imagine a lot of these are going to probably be PDP heavy. And I think that's where this private family office investor will be able to see a lot of unique, high grossing, high yielding opportunities that probably fit a longer hold, maybe not even private equity. So I think there'll be some stuff for private equity, and I think there'll be some opportunities for the family office long-term holders that will be very interesting. And I think, you know, we might bring some of those theses to investor groups.
Yeah, I think Scott, you know, said it well. You know, we pride ourselves at Riverbend here on having a 50 plus person team that is active in traditional energy across all three asset classes. And we form a business plan and seek capital and then go perform in that business plan with this continuity team that we've been putting together for 21 years. I think the energy private equity model, as Scott alluded to, has shrunk dramatically relative to a private equity firm having upwards of 40 portfolio companies. I think we're seeing that trend to the single digits. And yeah, I mean, it's trending towards big check sizes for big opportunities, but the smaller check sizes, there's space for that too in some of the smaller private equity firms. So, but the M&A that we've seen will shake some things loose. It'll be interesting where those assets come out first. But at Riverbend, we have a very consistent methodology with all three asset classes to invest over time, over the cycles, over consolidation, and over acquisition booms. And we think that consistency will set us up well, going into the future on traditional energy.
Brilliant. And I'm mindful of time, so there's just sort of one more question I'd put to you before we wrap up here. But we've spoken a lot on the upstream and traditional energy side of things. You obviously alluded to the fact you've got your transition fund, which you're working on. You've alluded to some of the investments that you've carried out or undertaken within that fund. We've seen a phenomenal amount of capital raised in the transition space over the last couple of years. And I think the question at the forefront of everybody's mind is where that capital is going to be invested. I think a lot of the feedback that we've been receiving is that a lot of the transition investment opportunities are not yet at sufficient commercial scale to be able to compete with the return profiles of traditional energy investments that private equity firms have become accustomed to and have appetite to go after. And I think the effects that we're seeing of this is a lot of private equity firms who have raised this capital are having to take on more risk and maybe venturing more into the growth equity or infrastructure side than or into that bracket of investment asset classes than to be able to find the types of returns that can compete with the types of returns and investment opportunities they have become accustomed to over time. So what's your take on this, and where do you see attractive investment opportunities across the energy transition value chain that can meet your returns expectations?
Yeah, Ben, I think that is tough. I mean, I think we've all seen that in the market space. Trying in the energy clean tech, energy transition clean tech boom we've seen, over the last 5 years, there has been a significant amount of recent capital raised in that area, and a lot of it's happened very quickly. And when things happen quickly, there can be an overstimulated market, valuations can rise, and that can lead to possibly lower returns. And so I think we've seen some of that. I think the targets for the energy transition, rates of return and MOICs, we've seen that be lower than some of the traditional energy results over the past 20 years. And so we do agree with you that that's a struggle right now. So it's, as most folks know, the space involves significant hard assets, the energy transition space, and solar, solar farms, wind farms, carbon capture, battery storage projects. Those are long dated projects that are very PP&E rich, very capital intense. And so we've been at Riverbend patiently observing these trends. And after much study, we entered the transition 2 years ago, really pursuing a growth equity strategy focused on businesses that have revenue, have EBITDA, and are supporting this big PP&E in infrastructure that other people are investing in. And so as we talked about previously, our transition business, we found an area of the market where we could differentiate ourselves essentially and leverage all of our Riverbend levels of expertise, engineering, land, commercial, finance, to underwrite opportunities that are going concerns that support the transition to ultimately be good winners for our investors. And so for sure, the transition is going through a slump right now in a variety of ways, but we're very hopeful on the way Riverbend's playing the sector that we're going to be smart, disciplined, and pick some great management teams to be partnered with and have some great success.
Brilliant. Well, I think that brings us nicely to a close. So, Randy, Scott, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I really appreciate you sharing your views on and approach towards the industry. Maybe just to wrap it up, I'll hand it over to you both for some closing comments, just to summarize what we've spoken about, to share your views on next steps for the industry, short to long-term outlook, and maybe just a closing message to any of your industry peers listening in today.
Yeah, Ben, well, no, thanks. I'll go first here. Just want to, again, thank you for your leadership. And the Energy Council for the opportunity to speak and share our thoughts. Hopefully, our peers, potential investment partners, bankers, and the like, and also consumers appreciate our story, appreciate our thoughts. And so we very much thank you for being here today. Our views generally are very supportive. We have all the above approach here at Riverbend, traditional energy and non-carbon based solutions. The road will continue, more and more demand, more and more electrification. All sources are important, and we think the world needs it all. And we're doing it in a very much more environmental friendly way than we were, for sure a decade ago and for sure 2 years ago. So we're continuously improving there. So we're part of the industry. We're very proud to be part of the energy industry, and we continue to stand ready to invest and supply the world with energy to drive better lives in our country and beyond. And as I earlier stated, I mean, we think River Bend is poised for the next 2-3 decades to be a top performer in all things energy. So again, Ben, thanks so much for being here.
No, Ben's been great, and would encourage anybody if they're downtown Houston around 2 Allen Center to stop in and come see us. You know, my final thought is, you know, River Bend has a 21-year history that a lot of folks don't know about, so it's great to be here and tell that story. We're always in pursuit of true north as we think about our underwriting, our approach. We're a young team, and like Randy mentioned, we're really focused on the next 20 years as we continue to build our solutions and how we go about underwriting. And we are. I mean, we're focused on investing in tomorrow's energy today. And that's kind of, you know, it is our slogan that we've come up with, but it's true. We do have an all approach, and we know we will be successful. And we look forward to getting those investors in that want to join us. So thanks again for allowing us to be on today.
And Ben, not only is the door always open for visitors, but we also, of interest for those out there, we publish a fantastic weekly industry monitoring slide deck that also has some fun with it too. And so for any of your viewers or listeners, if there's some interest there, please let us know.
Brilliant. Thanks both. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to speak to Randy and Scott about any of the points or issues that they have raised over the course of this episode, or if you'd be interested in exploring potential partnership opportunities with Riverbend Energy Group, then please email me at benjamin.west@energycouncil.com. The Energy Council represents the most senior and influential network of energy executives and investors in the world. Throughout the year, we leverage our relationships and industry knowledge to facilitate introductions on behalf of our clients, to help them to place capital, buy and sell deals, and form new partnerships. If you're interested in learning more about the ways that we can help your team by connecting with executives like Randy and Scott, then please email me directly or visit our website at www.energycouncil.com. Also, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to share these episodes with anyone in your network who you think would enjoy them. Thanks, and see you next time.